7:03 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
This is one of those conveyor belt songs.
Oh, yeah, totally.
One of the conveyor belt songs.
Yeah.
Working at a factory, stuff's moving through a conveyor belt really quickly.
I'm doing an alcohol read during a song from the Prohibition era.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So.
It's like just Kintec pumping out orthotics. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfie, what are you waiting for?
Look at those shoes go.
It's called Mr. Blowhard.
That's what it's called?
That's what it's called. Yeah, Mr. Blowhard.
Didn't see that coming. Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
I got some news. I got some news for the listeners.
Here. Okay.
They're really exciting. We are going to be doing a little social gathering of sorts. Sunday, April 28th at 2 p.m. What's that, you might ask? Oh, that's just game four of the Canucks opening round series against the Nashville Predators in Nashville. The 2 o'clock start time, we thought, you know what? Why don't we go to the Hollywood Theater? It's 3123 West Broadway, right in the heart of Kits. Greektown, as it says on the map. Greektown. anyway. We're going to be doing like just like a watch. I don't want to call it a party. I don't want to put a lot of expectations out there, right? You don't have to rent a tuxedo. You don't have to find a date. There's no cover.
No speeches.
Nothing.
We're just watching the hockey game.
Just hanging
out.
Won't
be your date. Can I still wear a tuxedo?
You can.
Yes, you can. 100%. Or you're going to wear one of those tuxedo shirts. If there's one person that has a tuxedo shirt, it's A-Dog. Anyway.
I may own several.
If you want to check out...
This is for the more formal occasion.
Yeah.
This is more of a dinner jacket.
Yeah. This is my evening wear tuxedo shirt.
The details aren't even out there on the internet yet, but we're just giving you advance notice. But the thing is, you don't really need a lot of advance notice. You can just show up on the day. Puck drop is at 2 o'clock. They're going to have all of their three bars fully stocked and working. Again, there's no cover at the door. They're going to have a food truck on location.
Massive big screen. Great sound. This is where we watched a lot of the World Cup games.
And we were like, this place rocks. It's awesome. So we're going to be there. All you need to know is that there's a hockey game, game four of the opening round, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. And if you want to hang out and watch at a really cool venue, Hollywood Theater on West Broadway. We'll be releasing more and more details as the week goes along.
You get to hang out with Halford and Brough, but more importantly, A-Dog and Laddie.
And I'll mention it. Brough may or may not be able to make it. So if you're expecting him, maybe he's not.
I'll be able to make it.
That's the big tease. Maybe he's there, maybe he's not. You have to show up on Sunday to find out.
Corey the Carpenter texts in, are you watching the hockey game on the Hollywood Theater screen?
Yeah.
We should have clarified that. Yep. It will be on.
It'll be one of the small TVs.
What did you think we were going to do? Watch it on our phones? What's wrong with you?
Everyone's just going to watch it on the phones. We've got a couple of 12-inch black and whites that will.
Like, you know, Michael Scott's TV from the dinner party episode? We'll be watching.
You remember when you had movie day when a substitute teacher came and rolled the television in?
Oh, best day of the year.
That's what we're going to do at the Hollywood Theater, Corey. We're not going to watch
it's another
second.
And intermissions? Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah, right. We're not going to utilize the massive movie screen whatsoever. We'll keep you updated and abreast. But if you want to start making plans now, go ahead. All you got to do is show up and have a good time. That's it.
So the story for tonight, game two at Rogers Arena, for me, it's probably can the Canucks move on from game one? And I know it was a great day, and people might be asking, well, why do you want them to move on from that? That was amazing. That was the best time we've had as Canucks fans in like a decade. But you got to move on. And you can't have an emotional letdown in game two. You know, so early in the playoffs, you can't be having emotional letdowns.
Maybe like those idiot Boston Bruins.
Yeah. And Rick Tocchet, again, this is, I think, the quote of yesterday where they were supposed to practice and then Rick Tocchet called an audible and made it an optional practice because he thought guys still needed some time to recover from all the excitement of game one. It was like the kids had a big night, and they stayed up super late, and they were very excited, and I'm just not sure they're ready for a full day of school today.
Yep.
So that's what Rick Tocchet had said. There was like 9 guys that showed up to skate, plus the backup goalies. And then Tocchet was asked about, you know, how do you maintain the urgency or the momentum going into game two? And he said, I think there are 4 or 5 guys that can really help us in game two. I thought they were just okay in game one. So we all know one of the players that Rick Tocchet is probably talking about.
Who's that, Jason?
Nils Höglander. No. Well, Hoagie probably is one of the guys, though, right? Like, he looked a little bit nervous. He was on that line with Pettersson. And I do wonder if Tocchet might go back to Mikheyev.
I would.
With Petey and Höglander. And you drop Lafferty back down to the fourth line with Bluger and PDG. Or maybe even Podkolzin. Does he come in for Phil DiGiuseppe? I would tend to say no on that one. I don't know anything about that. But I think, you know, I think Tocchet might still worry about having Höglander and Podkolzin in the lineup for such a big game. Although, you know, I'll go back and forth on this because Phil DiGiuseppe did take a penalty in that game.
I felt bad about the penalty.
It was a hard work penalty, right? Yeah. Like it was a puck battle.
He wasn't like undisciplined.
No,
it wasn't egregious.
Yeah.
You know?
So listen, I'm not going to talk too much about that because I mean that is a decision that Rick Tocchet has. I would put Mikheyev back with Pettersson and drop Lafferty down, but I don't know what I thought. That was a curious decision. Like I didn't really understand why exactly it was done, but it was done. And then ultimately on one of the goals, the Canucks surrendered. There was a bit of confusion between Pettersson, Lafferty and I guess Höglander. And you do have to wonder, at least in the back of your mind, was that something to do with a lack of familiarity?
Well, yeah, it wasn't Lafferty's fault, but it was Lafferty's fault. I mean, he got outed as the guy that messed up the read on it. And again, do you put that on a guy who got elevated to a role he probably wasn't 100% sure that he was going to be in? I mean, yeah, I'm going to be on Pettersson's line. I think that zigging when people think you're going to zag is always a good approach, you know, it keeps people on their toes and everything. Mm-hmm. So I know that the standard rite of passage in the playoffs is you win with that lineup, you don't change the lineup. You don't mess with a winning lineup. But I would seriously, seriously consider putting Podkolzin. As a matter of fact, it means absolutely
nothing. I don't think he'll do it without a practice.
I know. Like,
I think that's very unlikely.
But I think it's worth the upside.
Putting Podkolzin in?
Yeah.
Over PDG?
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. I'm not as concerned about that as
it's 8 minutes and 45 seconds of ice time. Right? Like that's what you're replacing. It's not a huge component. Mm. Yeah, those 8 minutes and 45 seconds could make the difference in a game. But I think tonight there's going to be an elevated energy level from the opponent, Nashville. And
definitely.
I think that putting Podkolzin in with his youth, his skating ability, his ability to get in on the forecheck, and let's be honest, faster than DiGiuseppe, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair thing.
I don't know about that.
I think he's a better skater.
Podkolzin? I don't know about that. I don't think there's a huge difference there. I wouldn't call Podkolzin a burner.
No. I think his straight line speed is better than DiGiuseppe. Anyway,
let's race them before the game, and whoever wins,
you know what?
You get to play.
Now that's an idea.
Yeah.
Now you're thinking. Anyway, I also think that it's just a little bit of an injection of like fresh energy, use something different. I get why you won't do it, though. I get why they won't do it. I still have no real clear-cut reason why the Lafferty move was made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people kind of asked around it, and no one really got a clear-cut answer either. I don't think we're ever going to.
There was so much to discuss from game one that I don't think he got the question about it. Ultimately, you know, it was more about the win and all the good things that happened as opposed to what about this minor lineup switch that you had?
I would say just get Mikheyev back up there. Höglander, Mikheyev, Petey, keep it together. Let it work through whatever sort of existential crisis it's having, you know, and just let it go. Let it do its thing. Let him. I mean, saying letting it cook is a bit ambitious, but just put it together and let it go.
Here's a text into the Dunbar Lumber text line. And if you got any thoughts or questions, text them in. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Butis in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. And of course, the text line is 650-650. Unsigned Canucks are literally wasting EP. You don't need to put literally in there. By the way the roster is constructed, Mikheyev has some of the all-time worst finish. Hoglander is okay, but really EP has turned into our third line. They don't do anything. Even if they win a round, not getting a legit winger for our second line will be our downfall. This is the debate that rages around Pettersson. Is it him or is it his wingers? And I always say, why can't it be both?
Yeah.
Why can't you admit that Pettersson probably needs better wingers, but you can also say that, you know, I'm watching Pettersson. I'm, to use a word that this texter uses, I'm literally watching him struggle out there.
Literally.
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 Literally?
Literally.
Literally.
Yeah, yeah. He's literally struggling out there. Yeah.
Is he struggling?
Yes.
Or is he just playing mediocre?
He is struggling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. I think he's struggling out there. Like, he is not a dynamic player.
See, I can, if I was to look up the dictionary definition of struggling, it would be someone that's actively hurting their team's chances of winning. And I don't classify him as that. Is he playing up to his potential? No.
Why would you use that definition for struggling? Struggling for me is trying but failing to reach your potential.
I mean,
or just you're out of answers. You know, like you look frustrated. You're like, think about like writing a test. I'm struggling with this test.
Literally.
This is very difficult. I don't understand it. I should have studied for this.
He doesn't
test.
Have any impact right now. That's just mainly what I noticed. Like, he's not impacting the game. So, the way.
There's flashes here and there. There's
he
flashes
gets a shot on that
there.
Once in a while, but like.
But like, if you compare, what Miller did in game one, where he was making his presence felt on every shift,
thriving, if you will.
There really is no comparison between the two, and there that should be comparable.
We talked about
this. That's what should make the Canucks so dangerous.
We talked about this off the air. I'll bring it up on the air. In the post-game show following the Game 1 victory, 4-2 Canucks win over the Nashville Predators, Sat and Bick and Brett Festerling and Randeep, they were having a sort of round table. And Sat brought up the notion that Petey was, and whether this was purely 100% intentional or the byproduct of the game, or if this is even a thing, but being deployed when Roman Josi was on the ice, as if that the Canucks needed, and fair enough, Josi is a very high-end point-producing defenseman, but almost as a counteract or a counterbalance for whatever Josi would bring in terms of generating offensive attacks for Nashville. And again, I'm not here to besmirch Sat's name or anything. Like, I mean, it was a very, very interesting assessment in the aftermath. Because you're really digging deep into the matchup games on that. I just wanted to put it out there as another wrinkle to this entire thing. Because I think at the very least, we should paint the picture as fully as possible. Other things we're looking for tonight. I would say, and we mentioned this off the top, from the Nashville side of things. And we'll talk to Adam Vingan coming up in about 15 minutes time. Dig deeper into the opponent. Because I'm going to be dead honest. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about Nashville period after game one.
No, because it was such an exciting time for Vancouver.
It was as I kind of laid it out on Monday, part of me, and a large part of me, was about the return of the playoffs period, first time in basically a decade, and then second was what the Canucks were going to do in their first game out. Nashville spoke at length yesterday about how disappointed they were in the lack of possession that they had, that they just didn't hold onto the puck long enough. They used a famous Rick Tocchet quote, connected, in that they weren't connected. They felt like when they had pucks in deep, and this sounds like hockey cliche 101, but I think there's something to it, their forecheck was just sort of non-existent. Like
that's a credit to the Canucks.
Right. That's exactly what they were saying. The one part where Brunette did give Vancouver credit is that the Canucks met pressure with pressure. Dead serious. He essentially said it, that, you know, they put enough pressure on all facets of the Predators game that when they had the pucks, I think it was, they actually got the pucks where they wanted to. It was the retrieval part, which just was totally non-existent. They had no offensive zone time. Like, you look at their 5-on-5 play, and the metrics it was just a very average run-of-the-mill game for the Preds. They didn't create a lot. Now,
the Canucks only had 21 shots.
At 5-on-5, it was a very low-event game, right?
And the Canucks should have had more shots. They missed the net way too many times, and that's been an ongoing issue all season. They need to hit the net.
Shot attempts, I think, were like double.
On that note, that's what the Predators were saying about their power play in game one, is they were not pleased with how few shots they got after the Ryan O'Reilly goal. Because I didn't even realize this, but after the All-Star break, they had the second best power play in the NHL. They were running at 27.2%. So they definitely saw an opportunity there when they were up 2-1 and they were getting the man advantages to salt that game away and to steal home ice right away. And what happened in a 12-second span? Smash and grab. Canucks turn the tables on them. Canucks are up 1-0 in the series. So there's a few things to look at from the Nashville perspective in terms of what they want to do and what they felt they left on the table in game one.
So I opened up my Twitter yesterday and I saw that there was some sort of debate going on about other fan bases making fun of the Canucks fan base for celebrating the game one victory so aggressively. And, you know, I think my advice to the Canucks fans who might be bothered by that is just ignore it. You know, your team has not had a playoff game for almost a decade at home. Enjoy the heck out of it. And, you know, you should be proud that the Canucks were coming off the ice and talking about how loud the crowd was and how inspiring it was to them. Because, you know, all those other fan bases haven't, you know, they haven't walked in your shoes for the last, whatever, almost a decade. They haven't been through all the meaningless games, the ones where you watch regardless of whether there's anything on the line. So they would just know that they would do the exact same thing if the, you know, if the tables were reversed. And frankly, you would probably do the exact same thing to them if they had had a long run and your team maybe had had success and you're kind of like, you know, like remember when the Leafs finally won a round last year?
I'm sure
there were some Canucks fans that, you know, poked a little fun at the fact that you guys are celebrating like you won the Stanley Cup after winning round one, you know, one round. And I remember saying at the time, I'm like, the Leafs fans have been through a lot. Like, you may not like their team or you might have a rivalry with their fan base, but like, I don't know, put yourself in their shoes for a while. Like, do you know how embarrassing that would have been to keep losing after round one? You keep losing, right? And despite the fact that you were favored in some of those, despite the fact that you had a big lead in those, you finally got over the hump and you won a playoff series. Celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, go do it. But also just, you know that don't let the other fan bases take away from your joy. Just ignore it. You know, you don't have to fire back with anything, or, you know, if it's a Flames fan, you don't have to be like, enjoy not making the playoffs for the next little while, right? It's like, just ignore them. And this means a lot to the Canucks organization. This means a lot to the city for the big games to be back. And, you know, don't, you know, I think one thing that definitely happened back in 2011 was, and I think this goes for the organization too, they thought that everyone was going to be like super happy for them, right?
Sure.
Well, that's not going to happen. It's a rivalry. It's why I don't cheer for any other Canadian team.
Yeah.
You know, I lean into this rivalry because it's fun, right? You know, like it's you're not supposed to be happy for other fan bases. Once in a while, it can happen, sure. But I just think this is the natural part of the playoffs. And if I was to give any advice to Canucks fans, it might be like, they're like making fun of us for celebrating too much. They're just jealous. No, they're just fans of other teams.
Yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I have no advice for fans whatsoever other than cheer hard for your team. Like that's essentially it. The wars that get waged between fan bases during the playoffs is a good thing. Some say it's like a great thing. I mean, if you go and look, traditionally, I always go back to England, the EPL, and you look at some of the rivalries that are just baked into the club's history. And it doesn't matter where they are in their progression. Like, they could be in the dumps facing relegation. They could be on their way to Europe to play in Champions League. It could be an FA Cup final. It could be a game in September that's the third match week of the season. Like, those matches are baked in, and they hate each other, and it's understood. It's gets down to the most primal. It's like it's red versus blue. Yeah. You know, it goes back Catholics versus Protestants, all that kind of stuff, right? It's great. And a lot of it is illogical and makes zero sense. It's like you guys hate each other because of a soccer club, and you're like, 100%. We're going to fight, and we're going to drink, and then we're going to fight some more. But
your colors are different than my colors, so I don't like your colors. Yeah. Well, my colors are the better colors.
It's just a sports hate.
But that's sports, yeah, right? That's literally sports.
You know what the best analogy is, you know, to this sort of stuff? You know the big rivalries that the military divisions have? Like, If you go to Navy,
yes,
you make fun of Army.
100%.
And if you're a Marines, you make fun of them all, right? Like, right. I don't know exactly how it all works, but
y'all look down on Air Force. Is that how it works? Yeah.
And don't get me started on the Coast Guard.
Right.
Right? But but you're all,
as you can see, we have a very firm understanding of this.
You're all at the end of the day on the same team. But what happens there is the rivalry drives you to be better.
Yeah, that's kind of the essence of it, right?
Yeah,
is you find poke the flaws in the opposition, and what can I make fun of, and why are they all partying on Scott Road after game one? Like, it's good that they're firing back at that, but it's
sometimes they just don't understand the context, right? And also, Preds fans get annoyed because
but who cares if they understand? Well, the context?
I'm not saying
they're fully
they can do whatever they want. It doesn't make a difference.
Make fun of us. That's what you should do.
We also vastly
outnumber
them.
You are not
a
Canucks fan.
Yeah. They're vastly outnumbered on social media as well, which is, I'm sure, why some of them got annoyed by it, because it's so loud, especially after that 9-year wait. A Preds fan on social media would be like, oh my God, this is just inundated with this.
Yeah, yeah.
But whatever, that's fine. Who cares?
I'm going to throw it out there like this. The fact that you get to experience any of this at all is a bonus. Mm-hmm. Because right now, there's a bunch of teams like the Buffalo Sabres. You know what they're celebrating right now? Bringing back a retread head coach. We got a lot more to get to on the program. Coming up, we're going to go to the Nashville side of things with Adam Vingan. He's doing some work on this series for Sportsnet. We'll join him to get all the latest on the Preds ahead of Game 2 tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Pre-game, post-game, and the actual game. You can hear it all right here on Sportsnet 650. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Adam Vingan, who's working his Preds Canucks series for Sportsnet, is going to be joining us in just a moment here. The highlight of hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. To the phone lines we go. Adam Vingan joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Adam. How are you?
Did you say I was the highlight of hour two? I've never been the highlight of anything.
Buddy, you are the highlight of hours one and two. All due respect to Greg Wyshynski. I'm putting you in the hierarchy.
Take that, Greg.
How you been, man?
I've been good. I'm hopeful that this hit will go better than the one I did earlier this morning when my son decided he really needed a Band-Aid while I was on the phone.
That can get pretty desperate. That can get pretty desperate. Yes. That's a desperate situation. If there's any sign of blood or even...
Occupied.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't even that. It was just he thought he had a scrape on his knee.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't one, but he insisted on a Band-Aid, so I put it on, and then he immediately wanted me to take it off. So that's the perils of fatherhood, right? But... He's spoken for currently, so we're all good.
Let's talk a little bit about the Nashville Predators. They didn't play terribly in game one. They had a bit of a lapse in 12 seconds that ultimately cost them the game. What are you looking for from the Preds tonight in game two?
As simplistic as this sounds, I'm looking for more from their top players. I thought the top line of Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, and Gus Nyquist was ineffective at 5-on-5, which is not something the Predators have often said this season. They were one of the highest scoring 5-on-5 lines in the league. Roman Josi played nearly 27 minutes and had one shot on goal, which was also uncharacteristic of him. And UC Saros needs to be better. I think the SportLogic data said he allowed 1.66 goals above expected in game one. And it would be too simplistic to say that UC Saros was the reason they lost, because despite everything that I just described, which is not what the Predators want, they were in position to win the game. So if they're looking for any signs of optimism, it's our top line was ineffective. Our Norris Trophy, candidate defenseman was not as, active offensively. Our goalie didn't make a save or two that he needed, and we still almost won the game. So, I'm sure that's what Andrew Burnett is preaching to the team. I know that they said they feel like they only need to make minor adjustments ahead of game two, and I would agree with that. So, those two goals in 12 seconds, was a major gut punch. And I think the least Predators fans can take solace in knowing that another team gave up two goals in 9 seconds last night. So it wasn't as bad. Yeah. It could have been worse, I guess. If you're an Islanders fan, I'm sorry if you're listening. But, I think the Predators, despite a lot of things going wrong for them, like in terms of what they needed their top players to do, they could have won. So, take that for what you will.
Based on who you spoke to and the reactions of the local market and where the team is at under, we've got to remember, this is the first year that Barry Trotz has been the full-time general manager. What were the expectations going into these playoffs? Was there a happy to be there sense, or was that crazy run that they went on post All-Star break leading everyone to think that there might be more than just a, hey, we're happy to be in the playoffs type feel?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, I think this season, based off of preseason expectations, is already a success because not very many people picked this team to make the playoffs. Sure. I certainly didn't pick this team to make the playoffs. And, for what was supposed to be a retooling year, they got, amazing performances throughout their lineup. As you mentioned, that 18-game point streak they went on in February and March really changed the perception around here of what this team could do. And nothing about that run was a fluke. They were first in goals for per game during that run. They were first in goals against per game during that run. The underlying numbers were also really good. So it wasn't a situation where, for example, UC Saros just played out of his mind for 6 weeks and he was the only, and he stole multiple games. And that's the only reason why they got to where they are.
Right.
Everything was clicking, on both ends of the ice. So that certainly changed expectations. I also think the way that Vancouver had been playing since the All-Star break gave Predators fans, some confidence that perhaps they could win this series because I don't have to tell you guys, you already know. I mean, the record wasn't as good for Vancouver. Their offense wasn't as productive. They played incredibly defensively, especially when Demko was out. But I think that all of that together, I think, gave Predators fans the thought that, yeah, maybe they can win a round. I don't think anyone thought they were going to make it to the Cup final or win the championship or anything. But I'm sure you guys saw that the Predators were a trendy upset pick in this series. And I think that speaks to what they were able to accomplish in the second half of the season. So I think if the Predators were to lose this series, obviously Predators fans would be disappointed. But I think based on what we thought this season was going to be for the Predators, I think it's already a success. I mean, as I said, I didn't think this team could make the playoffs. Even Barry Trotz had his doubts about what this team could be. I talked to him a few weeks ago for a story on Sportsnet.ca that ran over the weekend. And he even said he wasn't sure if this team was going to be very bad or sneaky good. And it ended up being sneaky good. But even he thought there was the potential for this team to be bad. So I think you have to take all of that into consideration.
See, this is why you're the highlight of hour two, because you segued perfectly into what I wanted to ask you about. So the piece that's up at sportsnet.ca about Barry Trotz, and it's funny because this comes the day after the you can go home again thing happened in Buffalo with Lindy Ruff and the Sabres. Barry Trotz comes back to Nashville and completely overhauls this team. Like you go back to last year's trade deadline and then what he did in the offseason. He changed players. He changed coach. He did a lot of things in a short period of time, and I don't think anyone really knew, including himself apparently, where this was going to go. How much credit does Trotz get for the success this team has had this year, and should he be in the running for GM of the year?
I do think he should be in running for GM of the year, and he deserves a lot of credit for what the Predators were able to do this year. I mean, his first two official acts as general manager were trading Ryan Johansson and buying out Matthew Shane.
Right.
And those were statement-making moves. You know, he had a quote after free agency that got a lot of play around here where he said, "I don't want you to come to Nashville to retire. I want you to come to Nashville to win." And that seemed like a thinly veiled shot at Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. And he made a point. He overpaid for culture in free agency. I think the cap it for Ryan O'Reilly was right, but I thought the term was a little too long. He definitely overpaid in both term and cap for Luke Shen. But they had the cap space to do it. They brought in Gus Nyquist on a fair deal as well. I think he pushed all the right buttons. I mean, the one thing I think that Barry Trotz, and I wrote this in the story, one thing that gives Barry Trotz, despite being a rookie general manager, what gives him a leg up on his contemporaries is the fact that he was a coach. He understands locker room dynamics. He understands what it takes to have the right mix of guys in a dressing room to win a Stanley Cup. And I think that's what played into his decisions. Like, it's hard to argue with most of the moves that he has made over the past year. So, you know, I absolutely think he deserves to be in the running for GM of the year. The fact that award gets voted on, was it after the second round, is so ridiculous. Because if the Predators don't get there, he's probably not going to win. Like, I think I would love to know a list of how many GMs won that award when their teams weren't in the conference final. Like, I have to imagine it's a pretty low percentage. I think it's kind of silly that award is voted in during the playoffs, but I digress. I think Barry Trotz has done a really good job. And the fact is, it's not even a job he necessarily was looking to do. I mean, David Poile brought it to him and he thought about it and decided he wanted to give it a go. I mean, it wasn't like he was looking for a general manager job. He was content, I think, with taking time off and eventually getting back behind the bench. But, you know, as he said to me in the story, you know, his mindset in management is what it was in coaching when making lineup decisions and such is, you know, just do what's right. And even if people disagree with it, if you know that it's right, it's right. And like I said, when he traded Ryan Johansson and Matthew Shane, a lot of people were like, well, how is this team going to score goals this year? Especially with the buyout of Duchene, who's had a good season in Dallas, but you know, it turned out to be the right decision. So yeah, Barry Trotz has done a fabulous job as a rookie GM.
I saw that quote that you were talking about too, the one where he said, like, this is about, you know, being a championship contender and winning championships and not just being, I guess, happy to be there, really. I gotta wonder, like, how much of that is the dynamic of trying to come back years later to do the thing that he couldn't do as a coach? Because for all the success that he had behind the bench in Nashville, they never got past the second round of the playoffs. That includes the 2011 series where Ryan Kesler, who we're going to have on the show later today, by the way, like almost single-handedly beat the Preds. But how much of this right now is Trotz trying to, now, I don't want to say make up for not getting the job done earlier because it was a different circumstance and scenario, but in terms of just getting to go back and win the title that he couldn't win as a coach?
Well, I really hope Ryan Kesler wasn't listening just now because I mentioned the name Ryan Johansson. Like, I don't know if that's triggering to Ryan Kesler, just as it was. So if Ryan Kesler is listening, I apologize. But to your point, you know, the ability to come back and finish what he started was a big selling point to this. Because as you said, you know, he was the coach here for 15 years. He never got out of the second round. He made a lot of chicken salad out of chicken bleep, mm-hmm. especially in the early years of the franchise in terms of the roster that he had, because the Predators, you know, they were tightening the purse strings. And of course, you know how they almost relocated, all that stuff. But you know, the fact that he was able to win a Stanley Cup as a coach, I think really, certainly helped. But I also think that he helped revive the identity of this franchise. I mean, the guy literally built, well, not literally, he figuratively, because I don't think he had a hard hat on and was laying cinder block or anything. he might have. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he did. He seems like a guy who would like that kind of stuff, but figuratively built the foundation of this franchise. And, you know, he'll talk about how in the early days, he and David Poile were looking at carpet swatches to figure out what kind of carpet to lay down in the dressing room. So I guess maybe he did literally build the foundation if he helped pick out the carpet. I don't know. Point is he helped build this franchise. He helped establish its identity, which he thought had disappeared. When I asked him what he thought about this franchise when he came back to it in his evaluation, he said that the Nashville DNA, that hardworking identity that drew fans to hockey in Nashville, had faded. They were slow. They were playing what he called a more veteran style of game. He just thought that the team had lost its way, and especially since he was the one that helped build that way. I think that it means a lot to him to be able to come back here, get this team back on the right track, and hopefully get it to win a championship. As I said, although he's already won the Stanley Cup once, I think it would mean more if he did it here.
Who is the Predators' top prospect, and where does that prospect, you know, what's the ceiling for him? Because, you know, one of the stories of the Preds for almost their entire existence is they've always, you know, or that for the most part, they've punched above their own weight during the regular season. So they haven't had this, you know, long list of top five picks or even top 10 picks. And I'm just wondering, look, I'm not saying that the Canucks are going to win this series. I just wonder if the Canucks do win this series and the Preds go out, if a lot of people will be at the draft going, kind of wish we'd finished closer to last.
Yeah, right. Well, that's one thing I used to argue all the time, that the Predators were not going to get better until they allowed themselves to get worse. And even Barry Trotz said in the story I referenced that he would rather have culture over a high draft pick, because those game changers are at the top of the draft. And he tried to trade into the top of the draft last year in Nashville. You know, there were reports, which I think he confirmed, that he was dangling their top goalie prospect, Yaroslav Askarov, in an attempt to move into the top five of the draft. And you know, it ultimately didn't work, and Askarov had a really good year in the American League. He may be their top prospect. I mean, they've got top prospects in college. Matthew Wood, who I believe just transferred. He played for UConn. I think he might have transferred to Minnesota. They've got some solid prospects playing in the American League as well. I'm not as up on my Predators prospects as I once was, but the point is that Barry Trotz said to me that there are teams, and this is obvious, that, you know, there are teams that have tried to burn it down and still have not been able to build it back up.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's the risk that he did not want to take. He did not want to take the risk of tearing it down to the studs and then trying to build it up with top draft picks and hope that eventually it would hit. I mean, we use this example all the time. Look what's been going on in Buffalo. The team hasn't made the playoffs in more than 10 years, and they've tried to tear it down and build it back up multiple times and haven't been able to figure it out. So I think that Barry Trotz does not seem like the kind of guy who is going to tank. He's not the type of guy that, I mean, cause he could have done that this year. I remember on the first day of free agency when they signed O'Reilly, Nyquist and Chen, my first thought was, isn't this counterintuitive to what they're trying to do? These are guys that can help you win. Should they be trying to win?
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously, you know, worked against what I thought, but it seems like this team is prepared to try to compete. And yeah, that might mean being where they have been in the draft, you know, picking 14th, 15th, 16th, but Barry Trotz has shown to be aggressive. So perhaps he can find a way to get into the top of the draft sometime with an aggressive trade and find that guy somewhere else. But yeah, Barry Trotz does not strike me as the burn it down, rebuild kind of guy.
Adam, great catching up with you. Thanks for taking the time to join us. Enjoy the rest of the series. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
All right, guys. My pleasure. Talk soon.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it. That's Adam Vingan from Sportsnet.ca here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Oh, Britt in Coquitlam wrote in. She said she's catching up on the podcast. Mike sounds tired. Do I sound tired today? Do I not have my usual zest for life?
You always sound tired.
I do? Yeah. Really? I thought I was usually pretty energetic in the mornings, like first thing. Like, hey,
yeah, you're not bad.
Rough show.
It's like a fake kind of energy. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
You're kind of like a fake person. I don't know how to explain it, but like what we see from you on the air is not who you are.
That's fake. You actually just described a fake person.
Yeah, I don't want to like strike to the heart of your identity, but I'm not sure you have a real identity.
Right. That's pretty much striking right to the heart of my identity.
Which you don't really have.
Heart of my fake identity.
How can you strike to an identity if you don't have one to strike to?
It's true. How can you break a heart when there's nothing to break?
It is funny, though. Like, let's use that.
I feel like we can move on.
No.
I sound tired.
Let's use that. Do you guys actually think it's going to be a challenge? I'm not saying they can't overcome it. But do you think it's going to be a challenge for the Canucks to, let's say, refocus and re-energize for Game 2 tonight because of how special Game 1 was?
Yeah, I think there's an element of it. I'm not even sure what direction it's going to go. They could come out too hyped up, right? They could be like, it's like Game 1 energy, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's Game 2. And then there's the opponent. I think that's the big thing. Is mm-hmm. You pointed out the notes, and we talked about it off the top. Like, you're not anticipating the same approach from the Preds because they weren't happy with their game in Game 1. And if you go and look at some of these other series, last night, I think the Leafs-Boston was probably the most instructive one. You know, after Game 1, it was doom and gloom for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Willie Nylander's out of the lineup. We get blown out 5-1. Look at them now. Mm-hmm. The Leafs are in a great spot. And all it took was one game to completely change that narrative because they came out, played a better game. And here's the thing. Leafs' top players showed up in a major way yesterday.
Well, one
specifically,
of them did. Austin Matthews,
right? Now,
this is why I'm really curious about Tocchet, because, I mean, yeah, I think he's going to win the Jack Adams, and deservedly so. He's been amazing this year. But so much of the playoffs is about the coaching staff responding to the opposition's response, because mm-hmm. you know the Preds are going to come out flying. Well, you assume they will. So how does the coaching staff negate that? How do they respond to that attack? And I'll be really curious to see what Tocchet and his staff do, because I've never seen them in this environment before as a Canucks fan.
Yeah, that's fair. I think for the most part, what you've heard from the Canucks is less about the other team and just more about their team.
Yeah,
and
worry about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, they know who's on the other team, and they know the X's and O's. But I think the Canucks have rightly, and the coaching staff has rightly, mostly just been focused on the Canucks and how they respond.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Tocchet calling an audible on yesterday's practice spoke pretty loudly about his gut instinct about the team.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I don't know, maybe he had a conversation with Quinn Hughes after it, or maybe he just said, okay, listen, that was a huge night in Vancouver. There was a lot of emotion. It was a very close game. We needed to come back. We needed to hold on at the end.
This roster's never really experienced anything.
Our guys were spent. And so he made it an optional practice yesterday when he would have liked to practice. Like, you don't think he would have liked to practice? I'm sure he would have.
Oh, he said
right?
he wanted to.
Yeah. He's
a big practice guy.
Well, not only that, not only does he have a belief that early in a series, you should be practicing. I'm sure there's a few things he would have liked to run through on the ice. Maybe some new line combinations. You know, I know that,
a shooting accuracy drill.
I do think that Mikheyev was bumped back up to that Pettersson and Hoglander line partway through the game. The lines did get a little jumbled, and I didn't pay as close attention as I should have to the lines because I was actually enjoying the spectacle of the game. But I think Mikheyev will be back on that line, and Lafferty will probably be back down. But I'm sure he would have liked to run through a few things, mm-hmm. Maybe given the power play a little bit of work. I'm sure they went through video on the power play, but that's one thing that needs to be a little bit better. So, I do have a little bit of concern. This is not being negative. This is just one of these challenges that you're going to have to face with a Canucks team that they do have some experienced players, but there's a lot of the guys that don't have the experience of the playoffs. Game 1 went pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the result was favorable, but the Canucks were far from perfect, and you're going to get a response from the Nashville Predators. they've got a leader like Ryan O'Reilly, who has seen pretty much everything you need to see in the playoffs.
Yeah,
so
we got Ian Cole.
Yeah.
His pregame pep talks, man.
It's true.
I'm sure a guy like Ian Cole does help.
For sure.
But the Canucks cannot be too happy with themselves for getting the game one win. And I go back to that third game of the regular season. We already touched on this. When Tocchet had that really amazing quote after they put up the stinker in Philadelphia because they were feeling pretty good about themselves after beating Edmonton two straight times to win the game. And he said, who do we think we are to be? What was the quote? It was some weird. Like,
who do we think we are? I am. No way. That's
yeah. Yeah. It was something like that. Who are we to think we're anybody?
Yeah.
That's what he said. And you know, I,
who do you think you are? I am.
That's it. That was Rick Tocchet after the Flyers game.
Weird thing to say after a 2-0 loss to the Flyers.
Yeah. And so hopefully those lessons were learned during the regular season. We all know there are lots of learning lessons during the regular season.
Big learning lesson guy.
Rick Tocchet is a big learning lesson guy.
So take the momentum of game one, but also forget it and turn it off and now
no, I don't
focus
think,
on just
I don't
this
even
game.
Think, I don't even think you should say take the momentum from it. I don't believe that momentum exists game to game. Just prepare.
I don't know. You
could
be pretty fired up.
You should already be fired up.
Even more so, though.
Already be. How can you say more so?
Sure.
You know what I think?
That's 110%.
Speaking of learning lessons from the regular season, this is something that Rick Tocchet did a bunch during the regular season, and it should be done tonight. Start the game with Joshua and Garland, and just build off that momentum. Just be like, boys, these guys carried us last game. They're going to start us off this game, and you have that sort of mentality where it's like the vibes from game one can carry over to game two.
Start off with Petey.
Yeah.
Pressure's on, buddy. Let's do this.
What's the opposite of momentum? We got one final hour to come. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.